skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 47 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And we need to do something ever so slightly different this episode. We need to start with an apology and a correction to our listeners. It's not often we need to do this, but this is important. So in last week's game show, the final round, or the first and only round of Have You Seen It, the final scores came through as Adam and Gemma equal on 7 and myself on 8. We've actually had a recount. We've gone back and listened through, and it turns out that we incorrectly awarded Adam 2 points for getting Maverick from Top Gun. But because he'd used his repeat card, as per the rules, he should have only got 1 point.
Ah.
So, dear listener, I'm sorry. We've misled you. Adam, in fact, finished dead last on 6 points, Gemma on 7, and me, of course, way out in front on 8. So we hope you'll forgive us, and we hope we will eventually earn back your respect.
It's pretty... it's fine. You know, I just... Thank you to that listener who... We want to be correct here.
Yes.
We want to be correct.
Every time. I also made a mistake as well. With the Mean Girls, it doesn't matter because Gemma didn't get it right, but it wasn't actually...
Rachel McAdams?
Yeah, it wasn't her that actually said the quote. No, it was the character that played Karen. But it didn't matter because Gemma got it wrong anyway. Mm. But just need to... I'll put my hands up. People are tweeting at me telling me I was wrong. Fine. I'll admit it.
We really need to...
That game show was
really,
a disaster.
We need to step our game up. I feel like we've let the listeners down colossally. We will never do it again, dear
awful.
Listener. You have my word.
Sorry from Skip to the End. Anyway, let's move on. Let's be positive.
What have we got coming up today? Adam, what film are we reviewing?
We're reviewing the second in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles franchise.
Indeed.
Out of the Shadows.
Yes, we are. Mark, what year are we skipping back to?
1983, the year you were born.
Correct. A grand year indeed. Adam, what is our topic?
We're going to be looking at our top three films that kind of changed the game in cinema, really. Like, something big, a big event in cinema, something that changed everything. It can be good or bad.
I'm super excited for this. I'm really excited to see what you've come up with and what kind of angles you've attacked it from. And Mark, what are we rewatching?
The Princess Bride, which, let's be honest, it's a watch for us.
Because none of us.
We've all gone in dry.
And the fact that none of us have seen it is inconceivable.
Listeners were giving us aggro, so we're sorry again for not taking the time to watch every film in the world.
We're also going to be giving away a great prize like we always do. We'll take listener questions, and we're going to launch a brand new game show later on in the show. So keep listening. Let's get started.
Topic for this week, game changer films. We talked about it a bit in the introduction there. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to put it out to you guys to say, I wanted your top three films that changed something in cinema. It could be something huge, it could be for better, it could be for worse. Doesn't matter which one it is, just something that film wasn't really the same afterwards. So did you guys impose any rules yourself on this when you were looking? It's quite a varied subject, this.
I didn't impose a rule per se, but I kind of changed my thinking a little way through when I was doing my research. And this plays into something. I think one of your friends texted you, Mark, and asked you. Someone said to you, is this kind of a research project where you're looking for the first things to have happened, or are you looking for things that you consider to be a game changer? And I think at first I was kind of looking for the first time something happened.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, that's not really what I want it to be. I want it to be more personal or more holistic, wider changes than just so-and-so was the first film to do this. So I've tried to think a bit more broadly than that.
I did a similar thing. I wasn't really looking for the first film to do something. I was looking for the film that kind of made that a thing.
Yeah.
Or the film for me that changed my view of how cinema worked.
Yeah.
You just nailed it on the head there, and it's exactly that. That's it. I've done a bit of research, and then I've set my decisions down. And even though I saw a lot coming in on social media, I was like, I can't change my mind. I'm sticking with these because there's such a big thing to choose from.
Yeah, and I think, like all of our topics, but especially true of this one, as long as we can justify our answers, I think pretty much everything's valid.
It's our podcast. If we can just say anything, yeah. We're having it. So yeah, I'm sorry.
That's what we do. That's why we do these varied subjects, so we can justify it and say, "Nope, that's it's right. It's correct. We're right."
Yeah, our word is law.
So, who wants to go first? Mark, should we go with you?
Let's do it. Mine is Toy Story.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, Toy Story is over 20 years old, and I think it was the first ever film that used solely CGI from a computer.
Yep. It was. I had to include this myself in my list.
Good to hear.
It's the first feature film animated entirely on computers.
Yep.
Now, if we look back now and think how many animated features there's been, that is probably one of the biggest monumental shifts in film we've seen.
Of course.
In the last 30, 40 years, for sure. So I had to include it as well.
The reason it's the first Pixar release as well, and if you think what they did after that to come up with every classic that we now love, even the sequels are as good as the original. We've got, obviously, classics. I don't like Brave very much, but we've got Ratatouille. We've got all those classics, Finding Nemo, and they're still banging them out of the park, still smashing it. Yeah. And this, for me, was the one that set its stone. It's the first of a kind. And think of the hours it must have saved not having to redraw every single scene and the computer.
I don't think you necessarily think how long it takes to animate something on a computer. It takes a very long time to animate on a computer. It probably takes longer to animate it on a computer than to draw it.
Yeah. Maybe just the manual labour overall.
At least back then it probably did anyway. Not so much anymore. I think Apple have got the sort of pads that you can actually draw on now.
And the thing is, the difference is with CGI versus hand-drawn. With CGI, you can have a team of animators working on it, whereas with hand-drawn, it's pretty much just one dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it was a massive, massive film. We've all talked about how much we love that and the trilogy.
I think you've kind of hit a good point on there as well about it was the first thing that really put Pixar into the mainstream as well. And now if you consider, it's not just Pixar, but things like DreamWorks. I mean, look at films like Shrek. They would never have got funding had it not been for something like Toy Story. A studio wouldn't have picked up and gone, oh, let's approach them and see if they can animate something for it. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. And it's now the standard for animation, to the point where if someone does bring out a film that is hand-drawn or that is stop-motion, people are sort of flabbergasted. They say, wow, check it out, there's this new film that it's done in stop-motion or it's been hand-drawn. It's so odd to go back to those old methods now because CGI is the set standard.
Yeah, I mean, we reviewed Animalisa.
We did.
Not too long ago, and we were all praising the stop-motion animation, etc. But the things that were seen as quite dated 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing a bit of a resurgence again. When a film does do it, we are shocked. We are going, oh, wow, that's amazing. it's great. So it did. It really did change cinema.
Thank you, Pixar. Honestly, thank you.
Thank you, Steve Jobs.
We got Monsters, Inc.
Thank you, Steve Jobs.
And John Lasseter. I'm going to go with Psycho.
Okay.
Now, Psycho changed the game for a couple of reasons. There's two, but only one I'm really going to harp on about. One of the reasons is that it is effectively the first of what we now know as slasher films. It was pretty much the first one of those, and one of the first true psychological thrillers. So it changed film in that sense. But there's a more specific thing that it did. The stars of this film were Anthony Perkins and Janet Leigh. And at the time, Janet Leigh was a bigger star than Anthony Perkins. She was the marquee name. Mm-hmm. And Hitchcock killed her off at the end of the first act. And this was unheard of. You simply did not do that. Your lead star wouldn't get killed off at all, or in the rare occasion when they did, it would be the last scene of the film. You sure as hell wouldn't kill them off.
Top billing.
Yeah, you would not kill them off one third of the way into the film. And he did that, and it was shocking to people for this to happen in 1960 or whenever this film came out. It was 1960. This was unheard of. And it's changed the game in that people are doing that exact same thing still. So you look at something like Scream. The first Scream, I believe Drew Barrymore was, if not the top name, one of the top names billed. She was killed off in the first scene. So there are people who are still doing that exact thing. There are people who are still doing that thing. But a wider thing that it did was say to the audience, expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
Don't go in with a set standard of what you think a film will be, because anything can happen now. And other directors took that and ran with it. It's not just about killing off your main character in the first act. It's about, you know, twist endings or whatever it might be. It was saying, don't have preconceived notions of how a film might work, because they've gone out of the window now. And that's what killing off Janet Leigh in the first act did. And that has just carried on throughout film for the last almost 60 years.
Fair play to the guy. He must have had some big balls at the time. Because it's like you say, no, but it's true. It's like now casting Leonardo DiCaprio in a massive film with Scorsese and he dies in 10 minutes. Yeah. It probably wouldn't happen.
Well, nowadays you'd have to go to the studio, explain exactly why you're paying this much money for an actor, only to kill them off within 20 minutes or 30 minutes of a film.
And the other thing that goes in hand with it is there wasn't the media then that there is now. So now you couldn't even keep that secret. If you cast, let's say you the equivalent of Janet Leigh, let's say you cast Kate Blanchett or something in your film, if you then kill her off in the first act, someone will have been on set, they'll have taken a picture of it, Snapchatted it, TMZ would have picked it up, they'd run a story, then before you know it's on Digital Spy, HitFix, AV Club, all the websites. Whereas then, there wasn't really any kind of media, there certainly wasn't the internet, of course, so this wouldn't have leaked, so it would have been as pure a surprise as you're going to get. It would have blown people's minds.
It's frustrating, really. We don't get many more surprises anymore. It's very rare.
It is rare.
I mean, 10 Cloverfield Lane was the one I can feel that just came from nowhere. Fair play, we didn't get photos of John Goodman going to a studio, you know.
Mm.
But there's not often we get a surprise.
No, it is very rare.
So what's your second then, Mark?
So if I say to you guys the name Walter Murch, you're probably thinking, who the hell is that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this goes back to when I was doing music at uni. This guy invented 5.1 surround sound.
Mm-hmm.
So the film he did it on was Apocalypse Now, which I only saw when I was at uni, so I don't remember it. I was quite drunk, and I want to revisit it one day. But this guy was the that was the first time he ever experimented with using 5.1. Mm-hmm. Before that, we had Star Wars was the first ever film to bring in really low frequencies, so subwoofer. But Close Encounters was the very first one that actually had a separate sub in the cinemas and stuff. This guy decided to put speakers at the back of the room and recreate for the listener an experience that is like they're there. Mm. What an impact he had.
Yeah, when you think about how standard that is in your big cinema chains.
Again, it's something that's not just changed cinema, it's changed everyday life.
Yeah, your home cinema
systems. Home cinema systems. People have surround sound for games consoles now.
Yeah. For football, everything, it makes you feel like you are there. You don't realise how much you take it for granted. And we go to the cinema and watch all our new releases. You've been to my house and seen I've got surround sound. Mm. I wasn't really sold on it until I worked at a TV shop.
Yeah.
I worked in there and I was demoing it for customers. And I used to sit there because obviously getting commission trying to sell it. Like, please buy some more speakers. Mm. But it's true, you don't realise stuff like Saving Private Ryan.
Did you spend all day listening to the surround sound? And when you got home and put your own TV on, were you just sitting there like,
aww? It was a little bit annoying. Stuff like that, stuff like Star Wars, everything. The amount it adds, people don't realise how much sound impacts a film. You take it for granted. You go to the cinema, sit there and really enjoy a film. Mm. You buy it on DVD, sit there and go, that's pretty good. But when you go to that cinema and it's done properly, we've all sat there with the demos, it's unreal.
I mean, when Walter first came up with this idea and put it out there and created this device, do you think he sold a lot of merch?
Terrible. Absolutely awful. Boo. Boo to you. So just to clarify, so that was Apocalypse Now, was it,
yes.
The first film? So that was your game changer.
That's the one that did it. Yeah. So thank you for Walter, and thank you for going out there and trying something that people didn't think could happen.
That's amazing. Go on, Adam, what's yours?
So I'm going to kick on now with Avatar. Now, we all have very different views on Avatar. I think I'm okay with it. I'm not a huge fan of it, not a bad fan of it, but we all agree.
I've never seen it, so.
Well, you won't agree then. But the 3D in Avatar is phenomenal.
Yep.
Absolute perfection.
Yep.
And this changed cinema for the worse.
Yeah.
Because now you can't seem to have a release without a 3D version accompanying it.
Yeah.
And most of the time, that 3D will add nothing.
Or actively detract from it, because oftentimes it makes it darker and blurrier.
Yeah. So I just feel that with this current trend of 3D in film, we've pretty much almost stopped trying to see things in 3D, haven't we?
Yeah, we rarely go in 3D.
We actively seek out places that views 2D screenings of things.
They're rare, though.
They are.
Sometimes you have to go. What's the film we had to go and watch in 3D? But I think it might be Captain America 2 or something. You had to only see it in 3D.
Yeah, there are a few films out there now that pretty much are only showing in 3D. And this is what I'm talking about. It changed cinema. It's changed the way people are doing things. People are now just literally filming in 2D, overlaying an image, and that's their 3D.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's nothing. It's awful.
It adds so little. And there are those films that are filmed with 3D specific cameras that don't look too bad because they don't affect the quality, they don't make it darker and blurrier. But those ones where you do the post-production 3D, they look shit more often than not. They look really, really poor. And even when they still look passable, they don't really add anything to it. Like one of the examples was when we went to see Mad Max And we saw that in 3D. And it had absolutely no value. I mean, because that was a brilliant, marvellous film. And the second time I saw it in 2D. And it wasn't really any different. The only thing I remember in the 3D was there's a bit where a steering wheel comes towards you, like flying at the screen, that was just a bit of gimmickry. It didn't add anything to the film at all. There's just no need, other than for jacking up prices and making people pay more.
And this is it. It's 3D is now a gimmick.
Yeah.
It's a gimmick to sell a film on. I think studios know if a film is going to do well or not. Do they put it in 3D and just say... That might add some people might enjoy that.
And it's a dying gimmick though, because TV manufacturers have started getting rid of the 3D part of their TV. New TV, if you go and buy a new Sony or a new LG or other brands are available, they generally don't come with 3D anymore.
Yeah.
And that means the 3D Blu-rays, they're going to stop being made, and it will all eventually filter back to the cinemas where they'll just stop releasing films in 3D. It's purely just the fact that it's making them a few quid at the minute is why they're still doing it.
And this is one of the things with 3D that I've really actively begun to hate, because I saw a trailer in 3D not too long ago at the cinema, and it actually gave me a headache.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. It actively made my viewing experience of that worse.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just it was too much.
Yeah, sensory overload.
Yeah,
yeah.
I remember when I first bought Coraline on DVD Blu-ray, and it came with the blue and red old school style 3D glasses, and I thought it was pretty good. So it was just that first experience at home. Look, I can. This is like the cinema. And it wasn't until Avatar, and I went to the cinema and watched it, and I will admit it was incredible. But it took me about 10 minutes to adjust because it was done that well. It was the new, you know, active glasses that made it all look different, and it was unreal. But in, I think it's only Gravity since that, which is probably 10 years ago for Avatar, that has impressed me, where I've gone, you need to see that in 3D.
Yeah.
Everything else, don't bother.
Because there's a reason for it. You know, if you're in space, you've got a star field behind you, so that was going to look impressive in 3D. So it made sense for that film to be in 3D. But if you get something like just a generic superhero film, where's the value? You know, seeing Magneto not looking like he's actually flying in 2D is no different to seeing him not looking like he's actually flying in 3D. It's shit either way.
I remember a friend of mine coming back from the cinema after watching it. I think it was Gulliver's Travels. You know, the one with Jack Black in 3D.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, how was it? He goes, oh, it's one of the worst films I've ever seen. I said, oh, he saw it in 3D. All right, no point to that. Yeah. That was his review of it.
Why would that be in 3D?
The only film I want to see in 3D, and I really hope it does happen, is Sharknado 4.
Well, yeah.
Ooh, that's the sort of thing, because you were talking about, you know, landscapes and the world and space.
Sharknado.
Imagine that coming at you and, you know.
Or Tara Reid's old face coming at you.
So, yeah, we're going to be reviewing that as well in a future episode.
We are indeed.
Ben, what have you got next?
My next one is Taxi Driver. Okay. And the reason why I've picked this is because it really brought to the fore the idea of the anti-hero.
Yes.
Now, prior to Taxi Driver, it's not to say that all good guys were purely good. They weren't. There were plenty of dickhead bad guys. Not long before Taxi Driver, you had Dirty Harry. And Dirty Harry was a hero, but an arsehole. But Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver was the first one who was pretty much a villain. He was a villainous guy, but we treat him like the hero of the piece. You know, he is the protagonist, even though he's a bad dude with, you know, massive mental illness.
Yeah.
And that bringing that to the fore really opened up cinema to say what a hero or what the focal point of a film could be. A couple of years after that, you had Godfather 2, I think, or around the same time you had Godfather 2, you had Michael Corleone as again, kind of an anti-hero figure. A couple of years after that, you had Tony Montana in Scarface, and it started to have villainous characters at the forefront. And ever since then, this has carried on through to things like Wall Street. Look at Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, a venal, avaricious scumbag who led to a boom in people joining banking firms to work on Wall Street because they love this guy. His, you know, greed, for want of a better word, is good. They took it as a mantra, even though he was an evil arsehole. And this all stems from that first appearance of Travis Bickle.
Okay.
And it all the way through to TV as well. You wouldn't have Tony Soprano without Travis Bickle. You wouldn't have Walter White without Travis Bickle. It really changed what a hero or what a leading man could be in film.
No, I think you've kind of done a really good job. I mean, it was something that existed within books and comic books, etc., for years prior, but in cinema, for sure, it was the first real time. Because even in cinema, all the good guys were Superman.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, purest of the pure.
Yep.
You know, people like, even the 1960s Batman wasn't the Batman we knew from the comics.
No, no.
It was a light-hearted Adam West.
Yeah.
Tale about a nice man who's trying to fight crime in a city.
Yeah.
So you're spot on there. It wasn't really a done thing.
Not in film or TV. As you say, in books and comics and so on, it was different because they're considered niche. They have niche markets. So you take a character like the Punisher. That was fine in books to begin with, in comics. But he wasn't really acceptable on film until someone like Travis Bickle came along first and said to, not just to the movie fans, but to the studios, we can make a movie about someone like this and people will come and see it.
Yeah, it will generate you money, so don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Oh, amazing.
I like this topic. It's actually really good, isn't it? I'm not going to do little crap now like top three aliens. I'm going to do discussions. I like the reasoning behind it all.
I think it's good. I think we've all got our own things. Like, you tend to bring the sort of top three robots or whatever. I'll bring these thought-provoking ones. Ben can bring his as well. If we're all doing them in order, it seems to work quite well.
It's a nice balance. I'll end with my pick, George Romero's Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
Now, don't get me wrong, this is not the first ever zombie film, but for me...
What?
Not ever. Mm. But for me, it laid the template for the kind of shuffling zombies that you now get in lots of TVs, series, you get it in films, and you definitely get it in video games. But if you watch the early zombie movies out there, they're not really done very well. They just look like humans that are slightly pale. But this guy made a zombie look like a zombie. And the movement, which we all know on Shaun the Dead, is always perfect. Mm-hmm. He nailed it in that film, better than any film I've seen even today. Even the latest, like, Dawn of the Dead remakes, he nailed it back then.
Yeah, I think you've kind of, again, you've really kind of taken that, taken the right point from that as well, which is the whole zombie thing existed before him, but in different forms.
Yeah.
Now his zombies are the ones that people, when they hear the word zombie, they identify as a zombie. Like, there was a film, I think, 1939, 1940, something like that, My Day with a Zombie, so I can't remember the exact name of it. I remember watching it on BBC once in this old black and white, and it was just about someone who'd come back from the dead. Mm. Like, they weren't trying to eat brain, they weren't doing anything that.
They weren't what we think of now as a zombie.
But our whole perception of what a zombie was changed, essentially, because of him.
It's true as well, and that's why when
World War Z
came out, people were up in arms because the zombies could run. And people were saying, what? That's not what zombies are. Zombies don't run. No, zombies are fictional people, fictional characters. You're just saying that because you've seen George Romero's version of zombies.
Yeah, zombies can fly and breathe fire if they want to. You know what I mean? You say it. But I think Zombieland got it pretty good as well. I enjoyed that style on it. But I'll always go back to this. And as far as remakes go, and I know we all hate remakes and against them, I believe that the remake of Dawn of the Dead is bloody good.
I enjoy
it. It's a really good fun.
Zack Snyder, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I just enjoy it.
He does tend to do well when he has source material already.
Yeah. And the source material he was given for this is textbook. So
I agree. I think the remake's not too bad.
No.
It's not as good as the original.
No.
Dawn of the Dead, but we're always going to say that.
And
anyway.
It's an absolute classic. So
And Romero obviously went on to then make several other, I think.
Day of the Dead, all of it. I don't think he's ever topped it, though, in my opinion. A lot of the films I've seen, I think he did it all on that, and then kind of...
Dawn of the Dead is definitely the best one of the Dead franchise.
Yeah.
Maybe Shaun of the Dead. Who knows? So I'll come ahead with my last choice then. Again, really, for better or worse, it's much down to your own opinion, I think. I think with this one, we've kind of had good and bad. Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Okay.
Now, it wasn't the first TV series to get a film, but arguably the most popular. Mm-hmm. I think Dragnet was the first back in sort of 1950s.
Oh, good old Dragnet. Yeah.
Not the 80s version, the 1950s version was the first one. But prior to Star Trek, there wasn't any others, I don't think. But this was the one that kind of really kind of broke the mold and said, look, TV series can come to film.
Yeah.
We can do a motion picture. Now, for good or bad... Is your own point of view. I think we've certainly had some terrible ones. I think Ray Winston's The Sweeney was with Plan B, I think it was.
Yeah.
Was absolutely awful. But then you look at things like Serenity, which came from Firefly, which were superb.
Yeah.
So again, really, for good or bad, it had a big following, relatively big budget for its day, made a lot of money. Not a great film by any stretch of the imagination. But it gave the studios the justification to start thinking, this makes money. If it's on TV,
and
people are going to want it.
People are going to come and see it. The big worry at the time, I think, was if they can see it for free on TV, as a series, why are they going to come to a cinema? Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be a different story. And that's what Star Trek did. And they went, oh, okay. So then people flocked. To go and see it.
See, I would argue, I take your point that it's for good or ill. I personally would argue it's a bad thing that has had some good offshoots. The good offshoots are there have been several, many, many dozens, if not hundreds, of great films made based on TV shows. Mm-hmm. But it's bad overall in the sense that it limits Hollywood's imagination. Mm-hmm. It has stifled Hollywood screenwriters coming up with original ideas. If they know they can just option a TV series into a movie, where's the creativity in that? And I think, so for me, it's more bad than good. Even though there's been a lot of great films that have come out of it, I just think as an idea, as a way of stifling creativity, it's been awful for cinema, really.
And I would be fully in agreement with yourself. Mm. I don't think it is necessarily a good thing. I think it's had, like you say, it's had good offshoots, but it is really up to your own interpretation. Everyone likes different things. So if you happen to like every single film that's come off a TV series, then get your head looked at.
Entourage.
Yeah, that's just say Entourage.
That's the end of the argument. Entourage.
Yeah. It did change cinema. It changed things.
Massively.
Yeah. And it got, are we on number 11 now of the Star Trek series? So it's obviously still going.
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, I'm actually quite looking forward to Star Trek Beyond now.
Yeah, me too. Looks all right.
I didn't realise until the other day you told me that Simon Pegg wrote it.
Yeah, I believe he co-writes it, which is why he's quite prominent in the trailer.
Yeah, it's all him. Yeah.
So my final pick, and I've got two specific reasons for this, is Iron Man.
Okay.
The first reason is because it's really properly introduced the concept of the shared universe. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say there weren't shared universes before. Back in the, I think it was like the 40s or 50s, the Universal monster movies existed in a loosely defined shared universe. Even something like Mark, your mate, Kevin Smith's View Askew Universe had, you know, those, what are those two idiots called?
Jay and Silent Bob, you know,
flitting.
Icons.
And, and characters from each film.
Yeah, flitting around in the background. So shared universes did exist, but not to the scope and scale of this. Iron Man kicked open the door for this, and now we've seen the MCU, which at this point is at, I think, 13 released films with another half a dozen,
another 50 if not more,
on the slate. It is without doubt the biggest, most detailed version of a shared universe that there has ever been in cinema, and it's opening up the doors to other distributors and filmmakers to do it. DC are doing it with their extended universe. Universal, again, are wanting to bring back all their monsters and have a shared universe for all their monsters. It's the way film is going, and Iron Man opened the door for that. And the thing about this shared universe, as compared to other ones that existed in the past, is it was really about cameos or nods and winks previously in shared universes, but that's not what the MCU is about. Everything is heavily interlinked and heavily dependent on what's come before. The storylines flow into one another. It's not just about cameos or slight nods and winks. You know, for example, if you went to see Captain America Civil War but hadn't bothered to see Ant-Man, you'd be thinking, what the frig is Paul Rudd doing in this?
Yeah.
You know, these things are important. You have to really have seen all of them to build up to know where you are.
Yeah, I mean, you can go into things missing one or two, but it's like you say, you don't have the whole picture.
You'd miss out. You're missing out on a bit. It's a jigsaw puzzle. Mm. That's what the modern shared universe is. It's a constantly growing jigsaw puzzle. And if you miss one of the films, you've missed a major piece of it, and you have a lesser experience because of that.
Yeah.
And Iron Man, the first in the MCU, it started the whole ball rolling, and it's something that I think now it's going to be the standard for cinema going forward. Everyone is now going to be looking for a money-grabbing shared universe.
Iron Man 1 was the first appearance of Nick Fury as well, wasn't it?
Yes, in the post-credits scene.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, like you say, it did kind of really kind of bring that to the forefront. Mm-hmm.
What the good thing about it is as well is usually when it's the first, it then builds and gets better, and it does. But I still think Iron Man, when I go back and visit it, it bloody did well for its first attempt.
It was great.
You know what I mean?
Great film.
It was awesome.
It was anchored by some brilliant actors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Downey Jr., unreal.
And Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane, and Gwyneth Paltrow to as Pepper Potts. She's been fantastic in that role.
What do you think her favourite role of all time is?
I was just curious. Had she probably looked back at her career, probably Sliding Doors.
Probably. That'd be my guess.
But yeah, that's probably one of the best casting films you've seen. Not Sliding Doors, Iron Man.
Oh, they're both. I mean, both.
Well, in Sliding Doors, you had two Gwyneth Paltrows. So that's pretty good.
That is pretty good, isn't it?
So. Enough of this nonsense. So my second reason for why I've chosen Iron Man is because it also revolutionized the way we look at superheroes. And by that I mean pretty much every superhero film before this, if not all of them, I haven't done the research to be able to give you a fact to say it's all of them, but I would say the majority, they stuck to this rigid comic book idea of superheroes having an alter ego. So you'd have the person in the cape, but then they would have a civilian alter ego as well. And I love the fact that Iron Man just blew this out of the water. The final line in Iron Man is, "I am Iron Man." Tony Stark standing up there in a press conference. And boom, we were now in a world of superheroes that didn't have unnecessary alter egos. And the MCU has pretty much carried that on. You know, everyone knows that that Steve Rogers is Captain America. They've not even bothered with Thor's alter ego of Dr. Donald Blake. He's just Thor.
Yeah.
And with the exception probably of Peter Parker, everyone else in the MCU is pretty much a known person. Whereas DC is still sticking with Superman puts on his glasses and he's Clark Kent. And the reason why I'm so glad that the MCU did this and kind of abandoned alter egos is because it's one step too far in terms of suspending your disbelief. We have to do an awful lot of suspension of disbelief for superhero films. You have to believe a man can fly. And I can believe that. But what I can't believe is when Superman puts on glasses, no one realises he's fucking Superman. That's ludicrous. It's silly. So I love the fact that the MCU haven't even bothered to do this.
Yeah,
alter egos, don't need them.
There are certain exceptions, of course. Bruce Wayne and Batman, you can understand why people wouldn't necessarily make that connection. But yeah, when Clark Kent, when Superman puts on his glasses and I think does his hair the other way.
Yeah. He doesn't have a little curl at the front. Yeah.
Doesn't he look a bit like... Nah.
Yeah.
I might actually go into work tomorrow and do my hair the other way and just wear some glasses and people who's the new guy? Who's the new guy?
I'm sorry, who are you?
It's Mark. No, it's not. Come on, who are you?
And the thing is, even, you know, I'm using the extreme example of someone who looks exactly the same in and out of costume, but you're right, you talk about a mask Avenger like Batman. If you're in and out of a mask, people won't necessarily know who you are. But the MCU has made the decision, other than I assume with Spider-Man, I don't think they're going to reveal it's Peter Parker, but other than that, they've made the decision to say... It's one less thing to have to bother to explain. Mm-hmm. You know, that having to constantly say, oh, how come you were there when you should have been here? Oh, I don't know. Oh, who's Iron Man? Oh, he's my bodyguard. They've just got rid of that. It's too much faff. Just let people know these are the heroes. And that, I think, is pretty much revolutionary in superhero films up to that point.
And they've kind of done the same with their TV series as well. Like if you look at Daredevil, for example, he was Matt Murdock, Daredevil. Had the separate life running for roughly around about probably six episodes of series one before Foggy sort of found out who he was.
Yeah.
And it's just one less thing to explain. And as the series kind of goes on, more people find out, because you can't keep these things hidden.
No, it's like The Flash, actually. The Flash TV series, every week he's revealing his identity to someone else. And whilst it might seem a bit silly, if you are trying to maintain a secret identity, it's good for the viewer because it's less bullshit of pretending to be two people. It's just annoying to watch.
And it kind of gives the other characters a bit of credibility, because when people don't know who they are...
Yeah.
And you kind of think, really, you're accepting that explanation? Are you an idiot?
Well, it's like, you know, Superman's boss at the Daily Planet, Perry White. You are the worst journalist on Earth if you don't realise Superman works in your office.
Sack him now.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah. That's a very good point.
Do you guys want to hear what came through on social media? There was a lot, and it was really, like I said, it was like, I can't be influenced by this. I've got to stick with mine. First of all, we have Wayne Saunders with Psycho. It was the first film to kill off a main character. Jazz singer, first film with sound. I mean, that's pretty big. And Blair Witch, a shoestring budget, massive box office film, but the use of internet for publicity and the way that they did the found footage, and it took off from there. And it did.
It was the first film, as well, I think, to just hoodwink people into believing that it was good when it was absolute shit.
Joe Mayer has said, Jaws, it's the birth of a summer blockbuster. Which is huge. Yep. Mm-hmm. Star Wars, the fact that it's a special effects game changer, the fact that they had the company ILM for the actual movie, and he agrees with Toy Story. Emma Daly, The Matrix, for the fact of bullet time. Rope, for the fact it was filmed in real time, but it also gave us the fact that it was in one continuous shot. And Monsters, to show that a big screen special effects movie can be made in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Which is true. It's absolutely insane. Yeah. Stephen Younger said, Memento shows that you don't have to have a straightforward narrative. Seven, change the way that serial killer genres go. They can have violence with stuff not being shown as well as just being shown. And The Raid, it took action films to a whole new level. Richard Dickie Pierce has said, Singing in the Rain, totally amazing dance number.
Ben, you a big fan of Singing in the Rain?
Not so much.
John Williams for single-handedly producing some of the most memorable scores in film.
Mm. Quite frankly, a cinematic game changer in himself.
Yeah. Known good geek cast have said, Wizard of Oz, they gave us colour.
Oh, yeah.
Lord of the Rings for using motion capture for Gollum, which is...
You can make a good point for that. I think Andy Serkis has kind of made a good living off...
He's the king of it, really, isn't he?
Now.
Yeah. And the way Star Wars used miniatures for the special effects. Couple more, we got...
What, Warwick Davis?
Gallifrey Stan's pod have put Star Wars for the way that they can just do everything. Blazing Saddles, the way that it could put parody and get away with it, which is true. And Deadpool for the way they used R-rated films on a new level. And piss Ben off all the way for an hour and a half. And finally, Ken Major has said, A Trip to the Moon, the first film with a story, which I didn't realise. Oh. And Snow White was the very first animated film.
So Disney were pretty much about to go bankrupt, I believe, when they made it.
I still give more praise to Toy Story. It's a better film with better characters and I care more.
Agreed.
And that's Mark's review that will be on the Snow White DVD case.
Special Blu-ray steelbook.
Well, that actually brings us quite nicely into my choice of topic. We've talked about animations in various forms throughout the many, many episodes of this show, but what we've not really done is given props to the people who voice those characters. So what I want us to do come back and discuss our top three voice acting roles in animation.
I love that. That's great.
We've been to our local View cinema to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows, the sequel to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which came out of about 5 hours ago, I think. This the sequel seems to have come out real quick. The plot of this one is America, New York, is under attack by a villain, and the Turtles save New York again. It's pretty much the same deal as the first one. This time round, that they're dealing with Krang, and also a little bit of Shredder, and also the evil scientist Baxter Stockman. They are helped, as usual, by April O'Neil and her new friend Casey Jones. And that's pretty much it in terms of plot.
You can't really do much more.
Just a lot of CGI and explosions beyond that. Instant thought, Mark.
I really enjoyed this for the fact of it's been a while since we've gone to the cinema and just watched a beer and pizza, sort of popcorn, silly, hour and 50 minutes, it was long actually, silly action film.
Yeah.
And I turned my brain off and I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, to be honest. I seemed a bit dismissive in the intro, but it was, as I said for the first one, it was fine.
Let's score it.
Yeah, I'm literally, if you're going into a film with Megan Fox in one of the lead roles, mm-hmm. Tyler Perry and Seamus from WWE in one of the lead roles, it's just going to be a good bit of fun. That's all it's going to be. Don't go in there expecting a big plot line.
Yeah.
It was great. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Fun to watch.
Now, you've said great there. Yeah. That's a strong word. You might come back to regret that scoring time.
It was fine. It was.
Well, you can change your mind, didn't you? It's fine now.
No, I did genuinely enjoy watching it.
It was all right. It was a reasonably decent bit of fun. I do like the fact that in this one, it focused more on the turtles. The first one, it didn't really. The first one was more about April O'Neil and how she responded to them, whereas this time she's more of a secondary character, as she should be. So it was more focused on the turtles. The main thing you have to talk about when you talk about the turtles is the CGI, because you're looking at masses of CGI all the way through. And I thought it was really good, the motion capture especially, because the way they move and the way their eyes move, they're really expressive. And each one of them is very different in terms of their physical personality. So the mocap got them really well, I thought.
So were they not actors?
No, they weren't. They weren't actors painted green or
just. No, I just thought they were actual giant turtles.
They got from the pet shop.
Yeah,
and they did that thing where they put peanut butter on their mouth to make them open their mouth up and down. Like
exactly.
Yeah, look like they're talking. Yeah,
I think. I think the whole film actually had good CGI throughout, not just focusing on the actual turtle head or the body or the arms or whatever. The full. Splinter looked great again. I think Bebop and Rocksteady looked great when they actually transformed into the actual more sort of stupid over the top versions of themselves.
Yeah.
Shredder looked great.
I thought he looked shit. He didn't really wear his full Shredder costume.
But that's it. He still looks badass when he's got his scars.
When he finally gets that costume on, he gets the mask, etc. I prefer that to the one he had in the first one.
It was too much the first one, wasn't it?
Whereas this was a bit more subtle. It was quite a nice ninja armor.
Yeah.
Had his proper Shredder mask and then a couple of blades on these arms. Mm-hmm. And that was fine. But then he's gone.
Yeah, he was
within like a minute.
He was only in 5 or 6 scenes, the first 4 of which he wasn't in costume. Then he comes into costume, doesn't have a word with Krang, and then Krang freezes him and sticks him in a locker.
Didn't have much of a fight, did he, against Krang
not
at
really,
all?
No.
What do we think of Krang? Because he's obviously, when I think of my childhood, I don't think of always just shit in the bed at the ET. I think of other things that are more positive.
Did you have a giant blow up Krang as well?
Yeah. See, I'd have shut the bed at that.
Yeah. But I think they did it well for the fact that he is such a ridiculous character. He's a brain inside this big sort of boggle-eyed, weird
sort
tall
of squid thing in a robot.
Yeah. I think it did well. I think they made it look quite good. His voice is very annoying, just like the cartoon.
Yes, that's the correct decision, isn't it? They got Brad Garrett to do the voice, and I thought he did it great.
I think they just kept it very straightforward with Krang.
Yeah.
Like, this is what he was like back in the day. Mm. This is what he's like in the comics. here he is now.
Yeah, they made no attempt to sort of modernise him for a film audience. He was pretty much ripped out of the comics.
Which to me says they've kind of learnt their lessons from the first one, because that Shredder costume did get a lot of heat.
Yeah.
People didn't like it.
Yeah, from us, mainly.
Because they're too ridiculous with it. So it's good that they kind of strip that back and went, okay, what do people like about Krang? They like this, let's keep him that way.
And I think that speaks to what the whole film is like. The whole film was like a live-action cartoon.
Yeah.
It was very loose. Physics played no part in it whatsoever. No. It was silly and funny and daft, more so than the first one, I thought. I thought the first one tried to be a little bit too serious, whereas this one was just a cartoon. And so it should be. It is for kids.
Yeah. And this is one of the things. It was one of those films. It's for kids. There's moments for adults who liked the Turtles when they were kids.
And Megan Fox.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a film for kids overall.
Yeah.
It's good fun. It's about 2 hours long?
There or thereabouts.
Doesn't feel that way. Doesn't feel 2 hours.
It went by quite quickly, to be honest.
I put on Facebook the other day, I'm going to see Turtles tonight. Someone put, just seen it. It seems they've done everything that the first film didn't get right, and they've put it right from that. And I think they have. I really do. I think you're exactly right.
I think that's on the DVD.
come see it now. But it's true. It really is. It's just like, it is the ultimate beer and pizza film.
Yeah.
And that isn't just because of pizza for Michelangelo. I thought it was just a proper silly film, which I will watch again. If it's on telly, ITV2 in a few years, which it will be, I will sit there and I'll have a beer and I'll enjoy it. I'll have a Strongbow Dark Fruit and I'll sit there and I'll enjoy it for what it is. Because I literally had fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of pizza, there was far less product placement in this one than the first one.
I was about to say the same thing. Yeah. It's the last one, I think, got a lot of heat from us again, for its product placement. And they seem to kind of stop that in this new one as well, which is good.
I like that that's just followed me saying Strongbow Dark Fruits. So yeah, they're awful for product placement.
We wouldn't be caught dead doing that. Strongbow Dark Fruits.
By the way, just quickly, Mark, I see you've got Headshot Clothing's new Beetlejuice shirt.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a nice shirt, isn't it? Headshot Clothing.
Mark, can you put that can of Strongbow Dark Fruit down? We're trying to record a podcast.
It's just really nice. You know, when it's just hot though, it's a hot day today and nothing's cooled me down. Water hasn't done it, Coke hasn't done it. Strongbow Dark Fruits makes me feel like I'm... There I am.
It certainly quenches your thirst.
It is the thirst quencher.
You know what? If it cools down, I'm going to order a Domino's pizza.
But the pizza was a great start for them showing that they are a bit dumb. So Mike and Angelo at the basketball
Mike
game.
And Angelo.
Yeah. Yes.
Mike and Angelo.
Both of them.
Both of them. Slipping both up the and lads. Dropping that pizza. What a stupid mistake.
Oh, no.
Did you not think the crowd would react a bit differently as well? It was just like, oh, he's tripped. And the ref was like, play on. Some pizza got on the middle of there.
Mm.
It was a big issue for me. I think that was overlooked.
You're overthinking it, bruv.
It was too much.
You're overthinking it, bruv.
I think maybe in the next film we'll get the backstory of that pizza drop. I don't feel like we're getting the full story.
Let's talk about some of the actors. Megan Fox is usually a dead-eyed mannequin. But in this film and the first film in this series, I think she's quite good.
Yeah, she's playing April O'Neil well.
She is. You know, it's not a film that requires a lot of effort or a lot of ability, but she's doing what she needs to do well. So I quite like her. But as I say, her role has been reduced this time round. There is a needlessly gratuitous scene in this film. So as we've said, it's for kids. But right at the start of the film, she inexplicably changes her clothing to be in like a slutty Catholic schoolgirl outfit that is inappropriate for six-year-old kids. We enjoyed it, of course, but there was no need for it. What was the story value of that? Anyone, give me an answer.
It was just to stop that dude, wasn't it? She downloaded his...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, but why did she need to be in that costume?
It's because the other girls were.
Yes, but why did they need to be in that costume?
yeah.
There was no reason for it.
Well, in a bit, I want to see the photos that Adam took on his night out the other day, so I'm going to put a little skirt on, like Britney Spears, do my little cardigan, and then creep up to him, and then, you know, like, Adam, how's it going? And nick his phone, and
It works every time.
Those stockings as well that I wear. But yeah, you're right. And it was literally that one moment where you did think to yourself, they've done that for the dads that are about to take their kids.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Or just the old buggers like us are in the office.
Well, let's talk about the more serious actors, the people that have got a real good CV for acting. Sheamus from WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, usually when wrestlers do films, excluding Rowdy Roddy Piper, a lot of them are dreadful.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was bloody good. He had fun.
He was
fun.
Solid.
He had fun.
A bit of a spoiler there. You said usually they're awful, so you've just given away how you felt about the Princess Bride.
Of course, Andre the Giant.
Big Andre the Giant in there.
Stick around for that. I might say not all wrestlers.
But I think you're right. I think Sheamus was clearly having good fun, as was Gary Anthony Williams, who played Bebop. But both of those two guys just seem to be having a laugh with it, as well you should.
I'm not sure how true it is, but I read that allegedly CM Punk had gone forward for the role as well.
I read that, yeah.
I don't really think he'd have fit.
He wouldn't have been as rock steady as Sheamus was, no. Yeah. He wouldn't have quite been right for it, I don't think.
He'd have done a... If they hired him as like Casey Jones or something, I could have seen that.
Yeah.
But...
I could see Punk as like an arsehole gang member in a remake of The Warriors, but I can't see him as Rocksteady so much.
But I enjoyed Sheamus' performance. It was just good fun. I guess Bebop was good fun as well. There was just comic relief in the end of it. That's what they are.
Stephen Amell from Arrow. I kind of enjoyed his performance. I like Arrow. I'm a fan of the Arrow TV series, but he is a very one-note actor. And Oliver Queen in the TV series is a very one-note character. So it's nice. Was nice to see him loosen up and play a slightly different character, but he still isn't a very good actor, Stephen Amell.
I think he was a very serious character in a film that wasn't particularly serious.
Yeah.
And that was a big... It just didn't really fit.
He was trying too hard on a film that requires no acting. Yeah. Like, just look at Megan. Yeah, she's smiling. She's her face doesn't move now because of the plastic surgery.
Allegedly.
But she doesn't move, does she? Her face is literally still.
It's Botoxed to hell.
And she's just
allegedly
smiling. Yeah. And she's just... You can see her reading off the card, but it's fine. It's fine. He was thinking he's, you know, could be the next Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. And it's not going to happen, mate.
He had the weirdest hockey mask I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Odd.
It's still a nightmare.
Yeah, it was terrifying. What about Tyler Perry? The last time we discussed a Tyler Perry acting role, it was his co-starring role in Gone Girl. We were all very surprised.
40-minute review that we did.
And we were all very surprised at how good he was. Was it... Was it the same this time around?
No.
I don't believe it was the same guy, because he was the opposite. He was literally having too much fun. It was like, You are not real.
He went into full on. I'm on set in Madea movies.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Sort of.
But I kind of liked it because the way he was. I don't know if he has kids, but the way he was acting, it makes me think he has kids who are Turtles fans, and he did it for them. So he's going full on cartoon, and he was a great Baxter Stockman. I thought. I think it was great fun, and he survives the film, so I'm hoping he's going to be back and then turn into his fly character from the cartoons in the next one.
Well, they pretty much need an enemy now for the next one.
Oh yeah, well yeah, Krang's
Shredder
been sent
and
packing.
Krang are both.
Yeah.
Gone. So we'll see.
What would you... Oh, God, I don't know where the third film's going to go. My brain's already ticking now.
Well, this is it. I mean, we've obviously got the five turtles now.
Yep.
Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, and Mike and Angelo.
Yeah,
all five.
So now there's five turtles.
So that'll be good. He needs a yellow one round his head, I think. That'd look good. What do you reckon? Yellow on top of the turtle head?
Yeah.
Is that sweet corn?
Is there anything else to say? I honestly am going to struggle to talk about this film.
I don't know that I can drag anything else out of this.
No, I think there's not a lot of thought required. It is good fun to watch.
Yeah.
Do go and see it. It's a good, fun film.
Oh, I tell you what, I very much enjoyed the trailer for The Secret Life of Pets that was on before it.
Oh, so did I. That was great.
That looks great.
And stick around in a few minutes to hear more about that film with this week's competition. And in the meantime, we'll rate this film.
Yeah, let's score it then. I mean, I think I'm going to be hard pushed to give it anything other than I gave the original, the first one, right there, 6.
Exactly the same with me. I gave last one 6, I'll give this one 6.
It's an improvement on the first one.
Oh.
So it's 7. Doesn't make any difference
still
to the score.
Still 6 overall, yeah.
That's still good.
Fair enough. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Out of the Shadows, 6 out of 10.
It's competition time yet again. We're always giving stuff away this podcast, and I think the listeners are very lucky. I don't know of a podcast that gives stuff away every other week, especially the stuff we give away.
Mm-hmm. We do pretty well with it, don't we?
Big time. On the last episode, we ran a competition for The Boss, the new film with Melissa McCarthy, and we had 5 packs of stationery and cookie jars and random pens and paper and lots
of
different
stuff.
Loads. Take photos when you win it so we can see what's really in there, but it all looks good.
Oh, we just heard rumours of them.
And basically, the question I asked was, what was the character called that Melissa McCarthy plays in The Boss? Do you know this, Ben?
Michelle Darnell.
There you go. You can have one of the pieces of paper.
Thanks.
And
can I have one of the cookies?
Now, the winners are James, which is at boom3r_boy, filmcarnage at film_carnage, Laura Betty, which is at boopsu, Rosie Rose, which is at truelovesrue, and Rachel Meza, which is at Rachy Penguins. Now, also, and I'm going to say it, We did give a better prize away on the last episode as well. A skip to the end one-off mug.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying it's better as a product, but the fact there's only one of them.
There is, yeah.
It's a rarer prize, at least.
Bloody rare. I will get a few more made in a few weeks, but at the moment it's a one-off. So I asked, what was the main film we reviewed on our one-year anniversary podcast?
Which none of us could remember. The people who actually did it, none of us could remember.
Do you remember now, Adam?
Nope.
Do you, Ben?
Pixels.
It is, which is tragic. And the winner is Ben Fenlon. So we'll be sending you the mug, and I expect you to...
Tragic.
It's tragic.
Ben really enjoyed that.
Gave it 6 out of 10, same as Turtles.
Okay, so... Mm. Okay. Well, another Ben's going to win that, and we're going to send that to you in the next few days. Now, Ben just mentioned in the last section The Secret Life of Pets, which I think we'll all admit the trailer was very funny.
Mm-hmm. It looks great. Mm-hmm.
And really good animation, and it includes a lot of cool people. Now, to celebrate this film, Universal have given us, get ready for this, a projector and a screen again.
That is awesome.
Adam's literally look at him.
I just wish we could keep something for ourselves.
You got a keyring off me last week.
Hello. And that's better than a projector and a screen.
Of course, which would have been perfect for home viewing. But anyway, let's give also a pack away for the films. There are lots of toys and merch and cuddly toys and stuff for this actual film. So we're going to give that to the same winner that wins the projector. But for those people saying, oh, I want one, keep an eye on Twitter over the next few days as well, because you might see a few more competitions for those prizes. You never know.
We do run a lot of competitions on our Twitter page.
At STTE Podcast.
Yes. So I'm thinking for the question on this episode for this prize, Louis C.K. is in this film. He's a voice.
Mm-hmm.
We love Louis C.K. here.
Big time.
Skips the end. What is the character called that he does the voice for in Secret Life of Pets? That simple. If you send in your answer on Twitter, Facebook, email, go on skiptheend.co.uk, and you get this right, and we pick it out of the hat, you will get a projector, a screen, and a Secret Life of Pets prize pack. Unreal.
Tremendous.
And I'm going to announce the winner in 2 weeks' time on episode 48.
So it's skip back in time. It's 1983. We're still in the 80s, Mark. You excited?
Every week that we do it, and it's in the 80s, I'm excited.
I've literally got to stop asking. It's just excited every time. Yeah. Every time it's the 80s, you're so excited. So I'm going to let you go first.
Well, what the listeners didn't see is that he used his hand to make an erection movement.
I'm trying to avoid talking about
it. It was just
that.
For our benefit, apparently.
It was a snake waking up.
Okay.
From the excitement of hearing Skip Back in Time.
Okie doke.
Well, it's not the first time, I'm sure. 1983, Mark, go.
War Games.
Wow.
One of the most 80s feeling films you're ever going to see. A classic film. And the reason I picked this is, I know there's a much bigger film that I'm sure one of you guys may have chosen, but I'm going for the reason that I only saw Star Wars 10 years ago. I've told you this at uni.
Yeah.
And I watched this film about 15, 20 years ago, and I watched it again and again, thinking that if I could get my NES out, I might start World War III.
Mm.
It really did believe that could happen.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. If you're talking about Return of the Jedi that was released that year, me and Ben didn't see it that year either.
I know, but it hasn't had its personal reasons and makes me feel more nostalgic of being that young child and not...
Okay.
You know, I like that film a lot.
Yeah, I think you're out of your mind picking that, frankly. But before we move on to our picks, you've read Ready Player One as well as me, haven't you, Mark?
I have. It's a fantastic book.
The main characters in that have to do kind of certain events to get through to the end of this game they're playing. And one of them is they have to recreate, they have to kind of live a movie. And if memory serves, it's War Games that they have to play through, isn't it?
Exactly that.
Yeah. So I'm intrigued to see when that film comes out in a couple of years. I wonder if they...
Spielberg gets involved and tries to get like Matthew Broderick back or something.
Because I wonder if they've secured the rights to that film so that they can then do that as it is in the book. Because that would be
interesting. Spielberg doesn't really do things by halves, so no. I imagine he probably has.
Yeah, he's not skint either.
I wouldn't be surprised to, in the lead up to that film, see a special edition War Games DVD coming out or something like that.
Bit of corporate synergy there,
Either. So,
have you both seen the film?
I don't believe I ever have, no.
I have a long, long time ago.
Joking aside, and I know we never do this when I say it, please watch it in the next 6 months
okay.
when you're really bored and there's nothing on, because honestly, I watched it again just to make sure I was making the right decision. And not out of my mind. And I confirm it was very very fun.
I can't say that I'll watch it in the next 6 months, but I'll do you this. I will watch it before I see Ready Player One.
Okay.
Yeah?
We'll put it on the list with Tremors.
I thought you said before I die. I was like, okay, cool.
We'll put it on the list with Tremors.
Next.
You
can put it under Tremors.
I'm never seeing Tremors.
But yeah, it's a great film. Matthew Broderick is a great actor, and we don't see enough of him anymore.
It's true.
He's a really cool guy, and he's up there with like Corey Feldman as the 80s guy. And I'm hopefully he won't have a singing career and do like a music and stuff, which Corey's now trying to do. But War Games, 80s film. Feels 80s, looks 80s, sounds 80s. It smells 80s.
It's a whole bunch of 80s.
It's everything I want.
Smells 80s.
It smells 80s.
So now I'm going to pass it over to one of you who can now jizz off over Return of the Jedi. So who do I go for first? Let's just go for Ben. You tell me why you love Jedi again.
Well, don't assume that I've picked Return of the Jedi. You don't know me.
Okay. So what have you gone for then, Ben?
Of course I've picked Return of the Jedi. Any year that a Star Wars film comes out of the original trilogy, that is always going to be my favourite film of that year. There is, you know, I'm giving away 1980 here as well, but it just is a fact. It is the best film in that year. And frankly, ignoring the fact that this is a legendary, brilliant film, it's not a very strong year beyond this, I thought. I thought it was quite a weak year.
I would say it's the weakest we've done so far of the 80s. It's the one where I've gone, oh, there's only two or three.
Yeah. But even so, even in a strong year, this would have been my number one. I love the Star Wars original trilogy. Some people argue that this is the weakest. They whinge about the Ewoks, saying, well, they've got these little teddy bears. I bloody love this film. I like the Ewoks. I love the start of the film, all the stuff going into Jabba's palace. I think it's fantastic. It is not as good as Empire Strikes Back. I would say it's as good as A New Hope. Not as good as the second one, but still a phenomenal film in its own right. Now, Adam, did you go with it as well?
Yes. Of course I went with Return of the Jedi.
Not War Games.
No. It was between this, I think, and probably Scarface this year. But I had to go with Return of the Jedi. Because I kind of sat there and thought, what do I watch the most out of those two? And Jedi is always going to be the one. I probably sit down once at least every year, maybe every 18 months, and watch the original trilogy through. You have to. I agree with what you're saying. You know, maybe people don't give this enough props necessarily because of what came before it, how strong Empire was. A lot of focus is given to the Ewoks, and I don't really see why.
No.
Like, the Ewoks are they're part of the final battle. They're part of some of the scenes on the Forest Moon of Endor, of course, but they're not really integral to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the stuff, like you said, on Jabba's Palace, great, amazing, absolutely brilliant. The stuff on Dagobah with Yoda's passing and... You know, it's just his conversations with Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
As a Force ghost as well. I mean, everything
in the original versions of the film, of course, not the Lucas-up remakes.
Of course. Yeah.
Can you also say Obi-Wan, just so the listeners know exactly.
Obi-Wan.
Yeah, thank you.
So it's a great film. I love this film. I love Return of the Jedi. Yeah. It is a great way to end this trilogy.
Yeah.
We've obviously now seen the continuation, the story afterwards, which is looking promising as well. We all love Force Awakens, but Jedi was not. It's not often that a trilogy finishes strongly.
Yeah,
but Jedi was that.
I thought it polished off the trilogy perfectly. And the Ewoks thing, I think a lot of complaints that people have is that they were too obviously a toy aimed at kids. Mm-hmm. Let's put the Ewoks in the film, then we can sell them as toys. But to me, that's worrying about closing the gate after the horse has bolted. It was already a massive cash cow in terms of selling toys. The series had started in 77, so 6 years on, Luke Skywalker action figures, Millennium Falcons were selling like hotcakes. So you can't then say, oh, these are a toy. The whole damn thing is a toy. It is a toy franchise.
And to me, if you're going to complain about that, then you have to complain about them giving Luke a new outfit and a new lightsaber. Mm-hmm. Because that's chance. The new lightsaber had storied relevance, but making it a different colour.
Yeah. So you can sell another version of the toy.
So, yeah, there was marketing behind. There's marketing behind all of your favourite films.
Yeah.
So you can't complain about that. No. I'm sorry.
Just wanted to back to a point Ben just made then. It's just a bit random, but you know the expression, sells like hot cakes?
Yeah.
Where can you go and buy hot cakes? Because Greg's do just sort of donuts that are cold and stuff, and everyone goes, oh, they sell like hot cakes. What are they judging that on? I can't think of anywhere I can go and buy hot cake.
Just going to let you know now.
Yeah,
there are other bakeries that make.
but it is true. You never see. Well, what's that massive queue? Is that for tickets for a gig? No, they're queuing up for those hot cakes.
That's true. Whenever I eat a cake, it's very much of the cold variety.
Yeah, you don't. You might get a warm donut,
like a hot cross bun or something.
But that's hot when you get it home. So you've already bought it.
Maybe we're just spoilt now. We've got like croissants, you know, we've got pain au chocolat.
All this lardy-da French.
Yeah, we've got all of this, you know, donuts, like you say. They didn't really exist in the olden times.
Mm, they just had hotcakes.
Yeah, they just had hotcakes.
So was it like Victoria Sponge but hot?
Yeah.
I just don't get that. I'm sorry, but stick around for next week's cake cast. But it's true, I just wanted to get that out in the open.
That's our latest segment, isn't it?
Yes. Cake to the end. I'm looking forward to it. So do you want to hear what the guys on social media? Alice Minted has said, The Outsiders. That's a film I haven't seen. Have you guys?
I don't know if I know what that is.
No?
Probably not.
Nerd Out With Me have said The Outsiders as well. This is what I'm saying.
Maybe we need to see it then.
We're saying it's not a strong year. We haven't even seen that. That could blow Jedi ever. Out the water. Yeah.
The podcast, Macabre have said Videodrome, which is a brilliant Cronenberg film. Absolutely awesome. At @L_Rob_1982, Eddie and the Cruisers.
Never
rock and roll film.
Never heard of it.
That's what I mean. There's a lot out there that we haven't heard of. Film Me on Kel, The Right Stuff.
Yeah, that's a good film.
Good film.
Mm-hmm. Not seen it. Spoilers podcast have said, Terms of Endearment, Never a Dry Eye in the Room. Never seen it.
No, not my cup of tea.
A lot of people are saying Trading Places as well.
That is a
good
great film.
That was a good film.
I watched that, I believe, on your recommendation.
Yeah, yeah. Superb film.
The Mad Daddy have said, Jedi or Scarface, say hello to my little friend Yoda. I like what he's done there, but like you said, Scarface just missed out.
Yeah, I just don't watch it as often as I watch Jedi.
I don't, you know, this might be sacrilegious. I don't think that film's as good as people make it out to be.
That is sacrilegious.
I think people love it because of Tony Montana, but the whole film is kind of blah for me.
But when that came out, people were buying it like hotcakes. They were. Yeah. They really were.
That was selling like cocaine. That was.
Stephanie, which is @Woolen_hat, Superman 3.
No.
I don't agree.
Ridiculous.
That is absolutely mental.
Dog shit.
It said she gave nightmares about the robot woman. At the the Namor podcast, The Meaning of Life.
Probably the weakest Monty Python
film. Yeah, it is the weakest one.
Not a great year.
No.
Two or three very good films. Like the tiers you were doing last week. Yeah. A lot of tier ones, a lot of tier fives.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what,
Superman
3 is tier 8.
1982. That's a good year. I don't know if you've looked forward, boys, but...
That's the year I was born. This is the one that people are waiting for. It's quite interesting, and stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. My love is like a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. It's as real as the feelings I feel. It's now time for the rewatch. And I do feel a bit wrong saying rewatch. We're not going to change the whole thing on this whole podcast and call it The Watch, but... Me, Adam and Ben all admitted on an episode about 3 or 4 episodes ago that we're not interested in seeing The Princess Bride. Someone had emailed in and a few people had gone on Twitter saying, I can't believe you've not done it. So I went with it as my last week's choice. It's an 80s film. It's from 1987. The story of a child who's being read a bedtime story from his grandpa. Basically about someone that's going to get married. Doesn't happen. Goes on the run. Lots of stuff happens. And about an hour and a half later, it ends.
There's more to it. There's slightly more to it than that. It's a swashbuckling fantasy romance where a woman's soon-to-be husband leaves, gets caught by pirates. She then gets taken in by a king, or at the time a prince, who's going to marry her and become the king and queen. Her supposedly missing or dead ex-boyfriend turns up to rescue her.
I was about to say that, but you've got it.
Of course you were. Of course you were.
I'm not sure whose version I preferred.
And in between, we get monsters, we get sword fights, we get even a big rat, and we get lots of other stuff. Now... Usually, it's quite a personal thing, a rewatch. We choose it and we can talk about why we love it or didn't like it, and then we offer it out to you guys, and we kind of want us to agree or disagree. This is a case of us all saying how we found this film for the first time. Adam, just because I'm looking at you, you go first. Did you enjoy your first experience of The Princess Bride?
It was all right.
Don't gush too much about it, mate. No, you know, hold something back.
It was all right. It's one of those films where I think that if you've watched it when you're younger, you enjoy it a lot more now than if you first watch it right now. I didn't think it was particularly bad, but I didn't really understand why everyone raved about it either.
That's my thoughts exactly. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I don't understand why it has classic status. I don't understand why this film that is, 30 years old, very nearly, is people are still raving about it. Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, I can only assume it's a childhood thing. It's mm-hmm. something they watched when they were growing up, and it's just seen as to be brilliant from there because they loved it as a kid. But I just found it seemed very similar to a lot of other things that had happened, I'd seen. And
it was pretty generic sort of fantasy. I think the fact that it had more of a comedic edge than most sort of swashbuckling romance adventures have, that kind of marks it out as different, but wasn't different enough for me.
I enjoyed it. It's a bit like, I've not seen a film like this since Stardust, which had the great Take That song on it, that had that kind of spirit and that kind of feeling, if you know what I mean. Mm. It's like that magical feeling of a film. And when I watched it, I was laughing quite a lot. I like that style of humour, and we lose that a little bit more in these modern-day films. I know it's a set time of the 80s, and it's a bit different, and like you said, they're very kind of niche-y, these films, but I don't know, I just enjoyed it, and I liked Andre the Giant. I liked, considering we met Carrie Elwes a few months ago, I wish we'd spoke to him about this, because everyone was talking to him about Saw and stuff like that, and I wanted, this is his film. He owns it for an hour and a half.
He is very good in that sort of old school Errol Flynn type mould.
Yeah, he was very much, he wrote a book, I think that's why he was appearing at the con, about his sort of time on the set. It was a very enjoyable tale at the end of the day. There was nothing, like I said, there was nothing particularly great about it for me. There was nothing bad about it. I certainly enjoyed it. Andre was Andre. Yeah, I don't really understand necessarily why he was in the film.
I couldn't really understand what he was saying half the time, because he's French, for one thing, so he has an accent. And then because of his size, his voice is just swallowed up in his own I don't know what he was saying.
You got to be just can you say that's you doing an impression, because people might think he's actually come back alive.
Sorry, that
sounded so close to him.
This wasn't us playing the imitation game.
I think this film gets a classic status from certain memorable things that happen in it, or I said, so I think the AFI listed the "My name is Inigo Montoya.
Yeah.
You killed my father. Prepare to die." Mm-hmm. as one of the like classic 100 lines in cinema.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why it's looked upon so fondly.
Yeah, it does have a lot of famous lines. Like I mentioned Inconceivable earlier, which Vizzini says about 10 times at the start of the film.
And what about at the wedding? Skip to the end.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
That did make me laugh when he said that.
I actually made a note of that as well.
I was sold on this film at the moment it started with Fred Savage, because in the Wonder Years.
I didn't know he was in it.
I didn't. And as soon as I saw him in bed, I was like, is this the Wonder Years film? I was like, no, someone told me. I like that guy. And if you check out photos of what he looks like now, he looks exactly the same as he did then. Yeah. Exactly.
He's got the same child head, but on a man body now. There was a lot of people in it that I didn't realise were in it. Peter Cook, I had no idea he was in it. He plays the clergyman. And Christopher Guest plays the king's right-hand man, or the prince's right-hand man.
And Wallace Shawn, who
is Vizzini,
I don't know what I've seen him in so many times. He's very young in this film, but I always just know his voice and his face.
I didn't understand his voice. He mentioned he was a Sicilian mob boss.
Yeah.
That's to me, I don't say Sicilian mob don't sound like that to me.
Don't sound like they're from the east coast of America somewhere. Yeah. One of the lines that he said made me laugh quite a bit. They were talking about some poison that Carrie Elwes's character Wesley had. And then Wallace Shawn's character said that it came from Australia. And as you know, Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. Funny, because it's true. No offence to our Australian listeners. You're not criminals anymore. You've outgrown it.
But it's an enjoyable film. It's one of those films that, like you said, the people go crazy for this. Yeah. Literally, like, it's an all-time classic. It isn't. And even if I'd watched it back in the 80s or as a kid, maybe as a kid I'd have really enjoyed it, because I'd have been like, this is the sort of bedtime story I wish I was being read, instead of ones about E.T. but realistically, I think if we were kids, like the Goonies and stuff like, you'd be loving it. You'd be absolutely loving it.
More than likely.
Yeah.
So a lot of our listeners are who have watched it at that age and have just gone, this is a classic.
I did like the explanation as to why Wesley was still alive, that he became the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Yeah.
I like the fact that everyone, it's just a title that's given to
passed
whoever.
Down,
Because the other person retires with all the money they've stolen and goes and lives somewhere.
Yeah, and then at the end he does the same thing to Inigo. Inigo becomes the Dread Pirate Roberts. One of the things in the film that I did love unreservedly was the, I think it was about 3 or 4 minute long, fight scene, the sword fighting scene between Wesley and Inigo. That was fantastic. The choreography on that fight scene was marvellous. And I read about this afterwards. They did all of the stunts. The only things that Carrie Elwes and Mandy Patinkin didn't do were the backflips off the bar. They both sort of swing off a bar. That's the only thing they didn't do. They got a stunt performer in. Every other part of the sword fight, they did. That's good. It's a long, long scene and just beautifully done.
And it's filled with some like fantastic moments. So the bits where they both reveal that they're not left-handed.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing. And I did like Inigo Montoya as a character. I thought
yes,
he was quite good. When he allows him to come up the cliff face, sit down, rest before he takes him on in the fight.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great.
He was my favourite character in the film by quite a distance. And Mandy Patinkin, who plays him, still to this day says it was his favourite role. Mm. And this is a guy who I think has won Tony Awards and is a highly respected American actor. And he still looks back on this film as the best thing he's ever done.
Unsurprising.
So that's great.
It must have been so much fun being on set of that film, though. It was cool, all the sets and everything.
I remember hearing stories about like Andre the Giant just being absolutely hammered.
Oh, I think he always was, wasn't
most
he?
Of the time.
After his 89th can.
Yeah.
Do you know the scene where the princess jumps out of the window and Andre catches her? She was on wires, because even though he's a big, strong man, because at that point he was kind of decrepit from all the beatings he'd taken in wrestling, he just didn't have the strength to physically hold her, so she had to be on wires. And the bit when Wesley's on his back, Wesley wasn't genuinely hanging on his back, he was standing on a step, because Andre just didn't have any strength left.
Wow.
Yeah.
I still can't believe as well that Mark Knopfler did the whole soundtrack for the whole film. I mean, that's rare to get someone of that sort of... Dire Straits, man.
Did you hear what his bargain was with Rob Reiner? Because Rob Reiner directed this.
Yeah.
And did you hear what Mark Knopfler said when Rob Reiner went to him and asked him to do the score?
Go on.
He said, "I will only do it if the cap that you wore in Spinal Tap appears somewhere in the film." And then in the scenes with Fred Savage set in the present day, you'll see that cap sort of on his shelf in the background.
That's incredible. Yeah.
And then after it was filmed, Mark Knopfler just went, "I was only joking." I thought Billy Crystal was great as well as Miracle Max. I think that was probably the most laugh-out-loud funny scene.
Yeah, with his wife coming in as well. And
they're in old crone makeup. Yeah. He was hilarious.
Genuine question, was the rat Warwick Davis?
It was a little person actor, but it wasn't Warwick, I don't think.
That rat looked cool. I like that. It made me laugh when he was fighting it and just trying to beat it up, because the way it moved was so fake. But I liked it. It was good.
Rats of unusual size, I think they were called. Something like that, weren't they?
It was something like that, yeah.
But it's one of those films that I'll honestly say, I came to this today thinking that maybe you're not going to like it at all. I thought one of us might be, I hate it. It's not my cup of tea.
I think one of the things about this film is there's nothing to dislike about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, nothing at all. There's nothing grossly offensive. The acting isn't bad.
Yeah.
The script isn't bad. There's nothing bad about it.
Mm. It's a good feel-good film.
Yeah.
It's a Sunday afternoon... Yeah.
And I think your main two people as well, Carrie West and Robin Wright, in one of her very first performances. I think at the time she was starring in an American soap opera. This was, I think, only her second film and the first one as a lead. Mm. And I thought she was great, really good in this.
I'm not joking. If we meet Carrie again, I'm going to talk to him about this.
Mm-hmm.
He'll hate it. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore, I don't think.
Oh, shit, he's written a book.
I know, but he'll have done his book tour last year. Yeah, and he's got the money. He's going to be like, I don't want to talk about it.
Imagine that. So, Carrie, you want to talk about Princess Bride? No, I'm not interested. You've just written a book about it. Nah,
yeah.
I'm not talking about it. If you want to know, read the book.
$10.99.
Isn't that how we all act, though, when people say, when we go, oh, yeah, I've been to see a film, and they go, oh, what was it like? Listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
That's more laziness than
not repeating myself, listen to the episode.
Anything else to say about this film? I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I really did.
It was good.
It was fine.
It was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as good as what they say, but it's good.
Yeah. I'm glad that I've seen it. I'm glad it's now one that I can put a tick next to on my list.
Ratings. You go first, Ben.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah, I kind of think if I were to give it 6, I'd be underselling it, but I don't know if 7 is overselling it. I'm going to go 7. I'm in a good mood. I'm going to give it 7 out of 10.
I've literally had the exact same feelings. Mm. It's a nice sunny day.
Yeah.
7.
Go on then.
It's an 8, but it's still a 7. My opinion
you
means nothing
one
today.
Higher, don't you?
Because it's an 80s film, it automatically gets one extra point. Go back and check on our website, it'll always get one extra score.
So The Princess Bride gets an overall score of 7 out of 10. And Adam, I believe it's your choice of rewatch for the next episode.
It is indeed. And I wanted to choose something that was a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe we haven't spoke about before, we haven't really looked at before. So our next rewatch is going to be The Avengers.
That's interesting, actually, because we've talked around that film in context of other films, but we haven't talked about it. Now, I just want to double-check you're not talking about the shit film with Uma Thurman.
I am talking about the 1998...
I'm forget this. Bullshit.
And I'll quote what a critic said about this. "This Avengers film is so horrendously, painfully and thoroughly awful, it gives other cinematic clunkers like Ishtar and Howard the Duck a good name."
I've never seen it, so
no, me neither.
I'll probably love it.
It wasn't made in the 80s.
Interesting. So next time, The Avengers.
Christ. Now it's time for our brand new quiz show that's going to run across the next three episodes, and it is called Lost the Plot. And how it works is, it's a team game, much like The Imitation Game was. The two of you who are going to be playing today, which is Adam and Mark, okay, you'll be working as a team. I've got the magical, mystical pot here once again, with 12 film names in there. You're going to take it in turns to pick one out. You get five goes each. The reason why there are 12 rather than 10 is that you each get the chance to pass. So if you pick out a film name, you can't go through with it, then you can put it back and pick one more. But you only get one chance to pass. And what you must do when you pick out the name is describe the plot to your teammate and they have to guess it. But I'm going to be very, very strict with this. There are very strict rules in this. You must not at any point mention any of the words of the title. If the word the or two is in the title, of course you can say that sort of thing, but any major word you can't say. Nor can you name any of the characters, nor can you name any of the people involved in the production of the film. So you can't say the director's name, the actor's names, the tea lady, anyone.
Oh, man.
All you can do is describe the plot.
Are we allowed to mention other characters they played?
No, you are not. Oh. You cannot link it through to other films.
But that's all I ever refer to people as.
And you can't do that today. And previously, when we had the Games Master in The Imitation Game, we said we would be quite strict, and if the impressions weren't up to snuff, we'd veto it. But we didn't. We didn't follow through. We were too simple and too easy on that. Not this time. I'm going to set the stall out today by being really strict. If I don't think you're abiding by the spirit of the game, you'll get a big one of these. And then it'll move on to the next person.
This is when the truth comes out that me and you haven't seen many good films.
So do we understand the rules of the game? You're going to take it in turns, picking one out. You get five each, but if you want to pass, you get one pass per person.
And is it only one guess per person?
You get one guess, so yes. Be careful. Be careful when throwing out your answer, because I must take your first answer.
You're going to be really strict about
this,
aren't
you? You're damn right I'm going to be. Yeah.
Jesus.
Okay.
Are we ready to play?
Let's go.
Mark, the mystical pot is closest to you, so pick out your first name.
This pot ain't as good as the one Adam brought for the last game. We've gone downhill. I thought we were supposed to be, you know. Right. Okay, so this is a film. It's the greatest film ever made. And it stars a friend who unfortunately gets his best friend cheating with his woman, which is...
The Room.
Yes! Yes! That's the start we wanted.
You should have had it with the greatest film ever made.
But the moment he said that, I was thinking, it's The Room, isn't it? It's about a friend. Yeah, it's The Room. Who has his best friend. Yeah, it's The Room.
I'll show you my pants next time.
Pass the pot over
That's
to Adam.
That's a good start.
Let's hope I can do as good a job as that. Mm-hmm.
I know.
So it's three actors who they go into a jungle. One of them has recently become black.
Keep going because I can't remember the name and I need a bit of time to think about what it's called.
So he's recently become black. Oh, it's really difficult to describe.
I know the film, I just can't remember the name. It's got Robert Downey Jr. in it.
I can't confirm or deny.
Neither Adam or I can confirm or deny.
Can you do something else to describe this? Because I need to get this name. I'm not losing already a point, and I can't remember the name.
I know you've got it. And
I know, it's frustrating the hell out of me.
To describe it any more isn't really going to help you get the title, I don't think.
Pissing me off, but I'm going to have to pass just for the fact of I can't remember the name.
Do you want to tell him, Adam?
Tropic Thunder.
I'm so angry at myself right now. So angry. Sorry, dude, I've already let the
really,
team down.
It's actually quite difficult to like describe without using certain words. And
okay, so this is part of the best action films ever made.
Okay, I'm going to put in a warning here. This isn't a veto, but it's a warning. If you keep using things like it's my favourite film or it's the best film, you're giving away things that aren't plot related. So no more of that. That's okay. Your last one.
That's just him though, right? I don't think I said any of that. No.
And it's a guy that goes out there to fight a baddie. and he has to protect the city. And he has a gun.
Brilliant. That narrows it down.
Keep going.
And the baddie's really bad. Like, really bad. Like a real badass.
Jesus. Describe the plot.
And he has to go out there, and I think this one's the airport. I can't remember. I really can't. I always get them mixed up. But, you know, it's a famous trilogy. Then they cashed in and made more, but I still see it as a trilogy.
Again, you're giving away more than the plot,
that's
mate.
Not right. Right.
That's all right. That's it. You're done.
Die Hard 2.
It was Die Hard with a Vengeance, with the a third vengeance. One. Yeah.
Bastard.
Not having that. No straying from the plot.
It's really bad. This guy's really bad. Okay. So, it's about a man who is orphaned. He trains to learn arts of ninjutsu and then returns home to essentially beat up the mentally ill.
What? Beat up the mentally ill?
What? What? Criminals and the mentally ill.
What? So it's a guy that's being trained so martial arts?
He's orphaned.
Okay.
And he goes away and trains in the martial arts.
Okay.
Before returning back to his hometown, his home city, and essentially beating up criminals and the mentally ill.
I wouldn't focus too much on the mentally ill part, Mark. Just think more about the criminals.
I have no idea.
Bet, I'm assuming you'd get this.
Yeah. But can I give it away? Have you given your final answer?
Yeah, of course.
It's Batman Begins, isn't it?
You fucking idiot. I love it.
I put a lot of emphasis on orphaned.
Yeah. Mentally ill. That's awesome. I don't mind not getting the points under that funny.
You've got 1 point between you so far.
Okay.
So there's this girl, and she goes down a certain road. And along the journey, she makes friends with some very odd characters. Some are made of metal, some are made of straw.
Wizard of Oz.
Yes!
Nicely done.
Yes! I suppose you didn't penalise me for saying road.
Why would I? Is that in the title?
It's part of the plot.
You could have said Yellow Brick Road, and that would have been perfectly within the limits.
I'm warming up now. You can see I know what I'm doing.
Oh, no. I don't think I can describe this.
Remember, Adam, if you're struggling on that, you do get one chance to throw it away and pick out another one.
I think if I'm going to have to try and describe it. It's.
I'm pretty good.
I can't even remember the plot, though, of this film.
You can always use your pass. You get one.
I think I'm going to have to, actually. Yeah, I'm going to take the pass.
Okay.
Am I allowed to know what it was?
Yeah, go on, tell him. What
it's
was
Clueless.
It?
Oh, God, yeah,
that would have been quite tricky to describe, yeah. That was one of the harder ones. Go on, pull again. Hopefully this one's better for you as you're laughing.
So, it's about two people who are in employment as dustbin men.
Men at work!
Yes! It is men at work!
Yes!
Well done.
Oh, thanks, Mum and Dad, for taking me to see that. I wouldn't have known.
Neither would have Ben. Ben would have even put it in the pot.
Okay, so this is a film. It's a scary film. And it's about someone that, in their dreams, attacks them. And he's a paedophile.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes!
Hey, well done.
Yes!
Not Ian Watkins' home movies.
My mate said to me the other day, you've got to try and go through a whole podcast without mentioning the Lost Prophets.
I don't think we can do it.
Sorry, mate.
So after the events of the first in this franchise,
ooh, dangerous game playing
he's tapping.
I'm just going into the plot.
That's fine. All just right. Let him that. Right. Give it, that's it.
All right.
We'll remember this.
I understand it's a bit tetchy water there, but
we'll be nicer when he plays.
The chosen one is continuing his training under the tutelage of his master. Before his master is called away to investigate a bounty hunter who is trying to kill a politician within the Senate.
Attack of the Clones.
No! I can't believe you got that.
That's the only time I'm going to allow you to get away with pointing out that it's a sequel.
Okay.
That's not within the limits of the game.
I just said it, after the events.
Mm.
We'll remember this when you're playing. Fuck, will we?
These are the last two now, aren't they?
So how many's left
There's
in the pot?
There's three in the pot. Three in the pot, so I've had a pass,
yeah.
This is a film.
Is it? That's a good start.
And it had... And
it reminded me of, do you know, at The Office where Aaron's like, so I woke up and James Spader just says, don't ever start your stories with, I woke up.
Yeah, everybody in the history of time has started that way.
So this is going to be the quickest one ever. You ready? A kid sees dead people. They don't even know they're dead.
The Sixth Sense.
Well done.
Last one then.
Last one.
I've kept my pass just hoping that last one. Oh, I can't now.
No. You can't, no. That one, that final one will go unplayed.
In all fairness, you got, if you'd passed on that, I'd have hit you. Okay. This is difficult.
You've played your pass, so you need to describe this one.
There's a woman, and she ends up shacking up with seven little fellas.
You use one of the words of the film.
So why?
I shouldn't have said seven.
Shouldn't have said seven, pal. You finished the game with a very creditable 6 out of 10, I would say.
Well, can I see what my pass was going to be?
If you would have played your pass, this is the final. So this is just for fun. You finished on 6, but have a go at that one, Mark.
Oh. It's a robot going around destroying everyone with a red eye.
Terminator.
Yes.
Well done. So 6 out of 10. I think that's a pretty good score, actually, because you started off quite ropely, but you brought it round towards the end. So good work. Who wants to be the Games Master next week?
I'll do it.
Brilliant. Okay. So it's the return of Team Barky Bark next week then, Mark, me and you.
Adam did all right. We did better than we did last time.
Yeah, big time. So more of this nonsense in 2 weeks.
We're almost at the end, but we've still got time for some good old listener questions. Helen Kennedy. Guys, what movie do you wish you were on set for during the making of?
Well, see, that's difficult, because you want to be on set for something that's actually happening.
Mm. Yeah.
You? Like, if you said something like X-Men Apocalypse, which is all CGI, you'd be pointless.
Yeah. I'd like to have been on set for Terminator Salvation to see Christian Bale going mental.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Probably The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Just for the whole car chase scene. Mm-hmm. So apparently Heath Ledger was skating around the set on his skateboard in his full Joker outfit.
Nice.
That'd be pretty fun just to chill. He'd be so cool just to chill out with at that point.
Probably for me, John Carpenter's Halloween, because it wasn't all CGI and stuff, and just watching him in that mask looking scary with his knife, just watching it happen in front of you. You know it'd be terrifying. Yeah. You wouldn't sleep for weeks. And then your parents would buy you an inflatable one. You know the way that ends. Dan Chowder. I want you guys to hold a Skip to the End Comic-Con. Okay, we can try.
Yeah.
Who would be your first choice of guests? One person each.
Mandy Patinkin.
Why not?
I just want him to turn around and say, my name is Iñigo Montoya.
I think genuinely, to keep it in tune with the idea of what a Comic-Con is, I'd want John Bernthal to be able to then talk to him about his role as the Punisher.
I would want Edgar Wright, which is going to be my answer for everything.
CM Punk.
That would be good.
So my mate Stu texted me today and said, I want you to ask these to the guys. I want to know, under no circumstances, what film should never, ever get a remake. The proudest film in your collection that should not be touched. Ever.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Would that kill you? Would that be your...
I just think it's been done perfectly already. Mm-hmm. As an adaptation from a graphic novel, it would make no sense to redo it. It's already been done. It's been done as amazingly and flashy as possible. Mm-hmm. Edgar Wright really hit the nail on the head, got a lot of the themes from the book and transferred them to screen in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Nice.
It'd just be pointless to do it again.
I think I'd go with Pulp Fiction. I think, you know, my first answer that came into my head was Blade Runner, because it's just my favourite film and I wouldn't want it to be messed with. But I think it's the sort of film that could actually be remade. It wouldn't be as good, but I don't think it would destroy it. Whereas something like Pulp Fiction, because the film just is Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm. It is his directorial vision. It is his words. that no one could possibly remake that without it being anything other than an absolute shit show.
Especially replacing certain cast members as well. It just wouldn't fit, would it?
Wouldn't work at all.
For me, it's Jaws. Leave it alone. Mm-hmm. They do it CGI now.
It's all right, you've got Kevin Smith's Moose Jaws coming, so it'll be just as good, won't it?
At Blame Thrower, what director should have quit after their first film?
Kevin Smith.
He wanted to go... He twat. He's then said, because they released something so good, but then released lots of shat.
Oh, it's not Kevin Smith, because he didn't release anything good.
I think probably Richard Kelly for Donnie Darko.
That's what I was about
to
say.
Because I know... What was the film,
Southland Tales? I enjoy that film, but it's not a great film.
No.
And then I think he did one called The Box or something after that, which wasn't good.
Brian Bertigo did Strangers, which I thought was quite scary. Mm. Genuinely a scary film. It was really well done. And then he released a film called The Mockingbird, which was a horror film. And honestly, it was straight to DVD. And I looked at his IMDb, and there's nothing else since.
Neil Blomkamp, I'd say, as well.
Well, he's only just released his first film again.
He just re-released it twice afterwards, yeah.
Anything for you? The Room?
I think you guys have kind of hit the nail on the head already. I'd probably say like Lars von Trier, but not even with the first one.
Mm.
Just don't make films.
just stop.
Yeah.
Sarah Bosworth, what band would you like to see a biopic released for? Wheatus.
And the film would be called Teenage Dirtbags. Of course it would.
You'd be missing a trick if it wasn't.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to go like a proper old school rock band. So you know there's going to be a lot of good stories.
Yeah. It'd be Black Sabbath for me.
Yeah.
A proper like biopic of their whole run.
AC/DC. Yes. Something like that. Like with Bon
Led Scott
Zeppelin. And...
Yeah.
Yeah, AC/DC or Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. So you know there's going to be some great tales, some great stories from it.
Kate Winnett. A lot of people come out and say, that film wasn't as good as the book. But has there been a film that was better than the book, in your opinion?
I would argue that Shawshank Redemption is, but only in the sense that it's come from a novella rather than a fully fleshed novel. Mm. So because there's more to it, it's deeper.
Yeah.
So I would argue that.
While you're thinking, I would say The Mist. Again, Stephen King, because he didn't go with the ending in the book of he turns around and shoots his missus and his kids. And I think that was a brave decision.
Yeah.
And I prefer that ending. That's dark and bleak and left me thinking, feeling cold.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a brave one, but a right one.
I think maybe probably something like Shutter Island. I think the film was actually probably better. I read the book and I saw the film. And I just think it may be, with a lot of the visual hints and things, I think it may be translated a bit better on screen because there were some visual hints that the book couldn't really give you.
I would agree with you, actually, because I've read a few of the Dennis Lehane books and seen all the movie adaptation as well, and I prefer the films to the books.
Yeah,
I'm not a big fan of his work, actually.
A lot of it, like I said, with Shutter Island, a lot of the mystery is all in kind of clues, and you can do that better on screen than in a book.
At Stastix, Ben, this is a good one for you. What are your thoughts on The Return of Xander Cage, the new XXX film coming out in 2017? They've just announced that Neymar, the footballer, is going to be in the film. Wow.
Okay. So the way that you improve an absolute stinking horseshit of a franchise is to bring in a non-actor.
It does help.
Ridiculous. I have no more words.
I literally just... I don't know what to say.
I actually can't believe that he's signed for that. Not as in Neymar, the mate, what's it?
Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel's gone to that now. He doesn't need to.
No.
But 2017, will we review that on an upcoming episode?
Maybe just wants to meet Neymar.
Just a big Neymar fan.
Billy Smits. Guys, what was the last film you watched that wasn't for Skip to the End that you just enjoyed?
Does he mean at the cinema?
Nope, just what was the last film you watched? What did you watch yesterday? We always watch films. What's the last film you watched that you enjoyed?
Well, I very recently watched Zoolander 2, and as Adam quite rightly told us a few weeks back, it was an utter shower of shit. Not remotely funny.
I love that review. It's not as good, so at least you didn't know he didn't lie to you.
Yeah,
you know.
But what I did do, in the long the weekend we had with the bank holiday, I watched all 12 of the MCU films that are currently available to buy. So that was good fun.
In a row?
In a row. Incredible. Over the course of 3 days, not in one day.
The last film I watched that wasn't for the podcast was Ghost in the Shell. I mean, it wasn't my first watch.
Mm.
But
you enjoy it?
Oh, every time.
Good. Last night I watched Eden Lake. Have you seen that film?
Nope, never heard of it.
Absolutely terrifying. Genuinely one of the best British films I've ever seen. Mm. Honestly.
Better than The Call-Up.
Nearly. But it's about, I'll tell you about the story, because it's got, what's...
Mackenzie Crook?
Nope, it's got the guy from, my brain today. It's got Michael Fassbender in it.
Really?
Yes. And it's about these guys that go and have a bit of a romantic weekend together, and they get terrorised by thugs, and the horror behind the fact that these sort of chavvy thugs basically, I won't ruin it, destroy their family and destroy them and everything about them, and it's harrowing.
And that's not spoiling anything.
No, nothing at all. It's horrendous, and one of the best horrors I've seen, because it could really happen. Lisa Rushmore. Guys, since doing this podcast, do you love movies more now or hate movies more now?
I don't think either are true. I don't think my love has changed one way or the other. But I do now look at films through more of an analytical eye. Whereas I could just sit and watch a film and just simply enjoy it, now I can't. Even if I know I'm not reviewing something, I think of it in the terms of a discussion I would have with you about it.
Yeah, I have to do actively turn that off. Mm. Like there'll be times where I'll be sitting there with my girlfriend or whatever watching a film, and she'll be enjoying it, and she'll say something, and I'll be like, nah, it's not that great. And then I'll start making a comment and just think, yeah, shut up, no one wants to hear this. Yeah. you're not recording like that. She's not interested in what you've got to say about this.
No. Don't you turn to Laura and say, Laura, get your recording up on your iPhone, because this is gold.
And my brain just goes, stop talking. She didn't want to hear this. Just tell her it's a good film, and she picked right, and that's it. Just be nice.
I think I enjoy the fact we watch more now, because we have a kick up the arse to at least watch two a week. But, yeah. but also when I am watching a film, I always have to somehow say to myself, that was a 7, or that was a 6 in my head. It's just a mental little, that was a 6.
I see a lot more now. I'd kind of fallen out of the habit of going to the cinema. I was only really going to see big new films. Otherwise, yeah, I was waiting until they were coming out on DVD. But now we make the effort to go at the very least once a fortnight, if not once a week.
Yeah. And it's good that when we listen to early episodes, we've actually now gone and watched the films that we never had seen, all those homeworks and all that.
It's good.
I think that's the other thing. There's a lot of stuff that was on our list that we never really got round to watching that we've got out the way.
We've done doing it now. This. Yeah.
It's crazy. And the very final question, Nuts for Movies on Twitter has said, this is a big one, the best film of the 2010s. So 6 years, what's been your best film? I think I know mine, but I'll listen back and then think, shit, I should have chose that. For pure enjoyment value, should I say Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a huge statement. Or is it Whiplash?
So are we starting from the year 2010 onwards?
Yes.
I think I'm going to say Inception. Oh,
I think I'm probably going to go with Cap 2.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I think actually sitting in a cinema watching that is a lot of the enjoyment, sort of that wow factor, the action. It kind of had a lot for me.
Yeah.
So I think I'd probably find something else, like if I sat down and thought and researched and think, oh no, definitely that. And then I'd probably come back with a list of about 10.
So did you go with Captain Mark? Did you go with Guardians?
I'll go with Guardians.
And I went with Inception. Well, at least we've all been consistent, because that tallies with the 3 picks we made in those respective years in Ask It Back feature.
Nice. That's good.
So a little bit of internal consistency there, lads. Well done.
I know I'll be walking home tonight and be like, it's amazing. Yeah. Why did I pick that? Keep your questions coming. The best way to go and ask us any question is on our Twitter page at STTE Podcast, but also our Facebook, which is /SkipTheEndPodcast. And we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
And that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End Podcast. Episode 47 is in the can, gentlemen.
Creeping closer to 50.
We've got two big celebratory episodes coming up. We've got our 50th episode special in 3 episodes' time. And then a couple of weeks after that, it's our 2-year anniversary. It's come around quick.
We should have combined them and just had a big dual one on 51.
Well, just not.
It just seems a bit like we have this big party to celebrate episode 50. They get one normal episode and then it's another party. Too much partying.
Yeah. I love how it makes it sound we're actually doing anything more for it other than just 3 men sat in a living room.
You wait to see what I've ordered. I've got streamers, I've got party hats.
Strippers?
Nope. Oh,
let's talk about what we're going to review next time round then. What is our rewatch next time round?
We're going to be rewatching The Avengers.
Do you want to be more specific?
1998 film starring Uma Thurman, Ralph Fiennes, and Sean Connery.
Isn't this the film that caused him to retire, Sean Connery? Or was that The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
This was before League
of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Oh, that's Adam's next rewatch.
Yeah.
That's in the bank.
Oh, that's what I meant.
So. I've picked the topic for next time. We're going to discuss the top three vocal performances in animations. Mark, what year? Yeah, it should be good. Mark, what year are we skipping back to?
The best year of all time, 1982.
And it is a very strong year. Not because you were poor, no one cares about that, but because there are a lot of just tremendously good films.
What did you sum up as not yet free the momentous occasion of your arrival on Earth?
Yeah.
Mine is no one gives a shit.
Not even your parents.
That's savage, man.
My mum and dad cared. That's it.
Cared. That's tense. What have you done to him?
Shat the bed.
Yeah, that E.T. story was only last week.
And as well as all that, we'll also be giving away a projector screen.
And a projector, yeah.
Good Lord Almighty. We'll be playing the second round of Lost the Plot, where Adam is going to be the games master.
Yep.
We'll take listener questions, and there'll just be a whole lot more of this. So, stay tuned.